You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where to activate our superpowers, we say false dichotomy, bro. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, and if you want to help us come up with a new, better catchphrase, let us know what you think on the social medias. Or if you already like all of our catchphrases, tell a friend about the show on the social medias, or here's a novel idea, off the social medias. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
There's life outside of social media? Since when?
Not since what? 2005, 2006? When did social media really start taking over? With MySpace?
Sure. Then. That? Let's call it then.
Okay, then.
Yeah. I miss life without social media.
Oh, I miss it so much. You know that. I rant about that all the time. I mean, the disconnected world people are in. And I think we'll see that in a lot of the news stories today, especially the... Especially all of them. I was gonna pick one, and then I scrolled through all four, and then I was like, nope, it's all of them.
It's cherry blossom season here in the nation's capital, which means we are invaded by hordes and live here. And much like every place that experiences tourism, it has the positives of bringing economic benefit, but the negatives of bringing humans.
Is it better or worse handled than the poppy apocalypse here in California?
It's at least better handled in the sense that they know every year it's going to happen, and we have an infrastructure for it. I like to go for walks after work this time of year, but anywhere near the tidal basin, and I'm just, you can't even fit onto the sidewalks at some points. It's a little bit like Disneyland at its peak times. Where you're just, it's like a line ride essentially in order to get anywhere. But I will say that that pales in comparison with the horror show that is the Metro during baseball season. I take the same line that takes people from downtown to the stadium, and sometimes it takes me 3, 4, 5 trains to physically get enough room that I can actually fit inside a Metro car this time of year. So, for all of you baseball fans, one more reason, I despise your sport.
Yeah, that's pretty standard for baseball, for sports, when you're taking the train in and out.
Why are there 700 home games?
How does baseball make money, Daniel, if they don't have 700 home games? I really don't understand it. Because any game you go to, the entire stadium is like a quarter full.
It's so quantity, not quality, with baseball.
100%.
It's all about the numbers, see? Oh, my God.
All right, and I here was going to rant about how everyone only cares about Japan's cherry blossom season when we have cherry blossom season in America. But if we want to go anti-American, anti-baseball, I guess that's where we're going this week.
Can we go anti-apple pie as well? Can we just get the trifecta?
No.
As you just heard, also joining us from Dale's lawn, forgoing his gay white male gay privilege by identifying as a woman, William Green.
Hello, hello. It's exciting times here in Dale's Lawn. We're quickly approaching the opening of my store, the reopening, and things are getting hectic and stressful, and I'm doing nothing but work during the day and then come home and do paperwork for preparing to open. So I've been a busy, busy boy. But today, I get to join you all. I've been looking forward to this all week, get to witness the farce with you all. So I'm very excited to be here.
Well, aren't you the little brown noser?
I'm so excited to do something other than paperwork. You don't understand.
Well, congratulations on the imminent opening of your business. We will have to, or the reopening, we will have to inform Midsiders about it. So if they come to Southern California, they can go and patronize you in the good way.
Midsider meetup.
Awesome. Yeah.
Midsider meetup at... I always mess it up.
I know. I'm Jersey waiting. Jersey. There you go.
I always end up saying the wrong sub shop. It's terrible.
It's only terrible because all the other ones are terrible. So,
well, I know a lot of terrible things. The news stories this week. Let's do it in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Have you ever wondered, how can I give these people money when you're listening to us? Well, there's a way that you can actually give us money. It's called patreon.com/themidside. Patreon's a platform that allows you, the listeners, to connect with us, the content creators, and give us a few bucks every time we produce a piece of content. If you appreciate it, we sincerely appreciate our Patreon subscribers. It really helps. And yeah, tell a friend about it, and let's get some more of those. But this week in news, man, I every year, Justin, have to suffer through the horror show that is April 1, April Fool's Day, because I'm not a prankster. I'm not going to pull the objectivist pranks or anti-reality, but I want to. I want to really badly. I hate pranks. I hate April Fool's Day. And so did all of Justin Bieber's fans.
Wait. We have to talk about that before we go into Justin Bieber, because I know everyone loves to talk about Justin Bieber, but you hate pranks because they're anti-reality?
No, I said I wouldn't do that. I was just inclined to pull the objectivist card. I hate pranks because I'm too, like, I don't look at the world even on April 1st and think, oh, someone's deceiving me. They say something and I go, oh, that must be true because they're saying it. And not that I'm unthinking about it, but I do accept people. I accept things on face value, basically. So if someone says, for instance, like Justin Bieber did, my girlfriend is pregnant, I'm going to congratulate them and say, awesome, nicely done. And then you might know where the story is going. Later on, I will go, God damn it, April Fools.
Okay, I think there's a difference between April Fool's Day pranks and pranks in general where you're just messing with someone. Where the prank is just an outright lie, it's not as amusing. Like, April Fool's Day has become, because of social media, it's just like, what kind of lie can you get people to believe online, basically? But pranks used to be like, oh, you know, I'm going to put a bucket of water above the door and somebody's going to walk in and the water's going to hit them.
Like, yeah, I don't that's like a any prank. Of that
that's something different. That's funny.
No, it's horrible.
Go watch the Three Stooges.
That person's day is ruined. Ruined!
My day is made.
Okay, so Justin Bieber took to Instagram to say that he and his wife, Haley Baldwin, I guess they're married now, sorry, said girlfriend earlier, are expecting. And he even posted a scan, a sonogram, and set up a picture of Haley getting her baby bump looked at. Alongside it, he wrote, if you thought it was April Fool's, just to really get all of our hearts going. Which I think is an attempt at a sentence. Turns out it was fake, after all. And in a third post, he released an ultrasound, not a sonogram. I said sonogram earlier. An ultrasound where there was, in fact, a dog where the baby should be. And he wrote alongside it, wait, OMG, is that a April Fool's? However, people were outraged. What? Yes, indeed. One person commented, that's not even funny. Some people can't even have kids, and to joke about stuff like that is not cool. Another follower agreed, quote, there are people struggling with infertility and loss every single day. Not cool, guys. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, Justin, though, has made no qualm about the fact that he really wants to be a dad, especially with Haley Baldwin. So some people, rightly so, I think, said, lighten up, it's a joke. What say you, Justin? Is this our first and only Justin Bieber story?
This is indeed our first and only Justin Bieber story, for good reasons. But I just think this was worth pointing out is how far down outrage culture has gone. I mean, my girlfriend told me about this. She was like, oh, yeah, did you see Justin Bieber's April Fool's Day joke? And I was like, no, because I ignore people on the internet, especially on April Fool's Day. And then, you know, she told me all about it. And then she goes, and of course, people are, and she didn't say, of course, she said, And it's so absurd. People are outraged at him. They're mad because they said some people can't have babies and he shouldn't have been joking about it. And I was like, why are you surprised at the outrage about this? I mean, on one hand, it's completely not surprising that they're outraged about this. But on the other hand, it's so extreme because if we take the principle they're operating by, there's literally nothing you can even talk about because there's always someone who's unable, right? You have the principle of in sports or in something where you're trying to be the best at, there will always be somebody better than you. Well, the inverse applies as well. There will always be somebody worse off than you. There will always be somebody at the bottom, right? There will always, for instance, be someone who's blind. So can you not joke about what you can see? I mean, can I not say, oh man, that was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen? This just shows how absurd it is. And it really, to me, is just attention grabbing. People just wanted to be the people who were different replying to the Justin Bieber thing. They didn't want to say, ah, you got me. I was fooled. Oh, that was a good one. Or they didn't want to like...
It's none of those things.
It's none of those things?
It's not fooling and it's not good.
The joke? I didn't say the joke was particularly good. I mean, that's another element of it that I agree with you on. Like, this guy, right, Justin Bieber, don't you have anything better to do with your time than like fake a sonogram and post it on Instagram? But again...
Well, he's married now, so it's not like he's going to be having sex.
It's part of it though is
terrible.
Something I've said about social media for a long time, Daniel, all of these different like National Cheeseburger Days, National Hamburger Day, National Double Cheeseburger Day, National Double Cheeseburger with Bacon Day. All of these days are created now just to have content on social media.
Except for National Sub Day. We're keeping that one.
Look, I have no problem with the individual places using it. Like, hey, Jersey Mike's using National Sub Day. But every day is used for content on every social media platform. And with someone like Justin Bieber, part of his job is just to get attention. It's not to be good at music. It's to get attention. And that's why he does something like this and why he sits around and thinks about it. I wish he would sit around and think about how to make his music better. He has some skill.
Well,
but instead he's thinking about this because...
Release more nude photos and he'll get more attention, I'm sure.
Well, I didn't even know there were first round of nude photos, Justin Bieber. William, does this just go to show that the people commenting on this have bought in consciously or unconsciously into the victimhood equals attention culture we live in?
I think you're right. I think that the way that this is working is there's some people who have just sort of internalized this. And I'm going to sound like Justin here. They've internalized this and no matter what happens, they have to see it in terms of their own victimhood. So I think that's going on. But I like to be a little more optimistic. I think this is just using outrage to get their own attention, right? Like to get attention for themselves. Like you can ride on the back of Justin Bieber's popularity by quote unquote calling him out, virtue signaling that he should not be offensive in this way in order to get more followers and attention for yourself online. I think that's what's going on more than anything. I don't think any of these people are genuinely offended that he makes this is like a super old joke. Like everyone knew it was a joke from the first tweet.
Instagram post, but yes. Justin, it appears to me that Justin Bieber is just bad at humor. He released a joke saying Haley Baldwin is pregnant, and then people were like, no, it's not. It's April Fool's. He posted a fake ultrasound saying, no, for real, guys, if you thought this was a joke, it's not a joke. Like, isn't that the first rule of humor? Like, if you get called out, just like, yeah, okay, it's a bad joke. Don't continue down the it's a joke road.
The fake picture, the ultrasound picture was like the Wikipedia result for ultrasound. So I if that is funny. Okay, I got to give him credit that if you've suckered someone and you use even worse evidence to back it up, that is funny.
Couldn't even Google image search and go to like page 3 and grab an ultrasound.
Hey, come on, it's like an episode of Catfish, right? Where they go on. I never understand this on the show Catfish, right? Where they call Neve and they call MTV and they're like, "Hey, Neve, we really need your help to figure out if this person is fake." And Neve does a Google reverse image search, and it's like, oh, this is a picture that comes up when you search for like tall, blonde, good-looking white guy. Like,
wait, like my, my picture shows up when you Google that? Is that what I just heard?
Yes, that's what you heard, William.
Justin, it's kittenfish, but yes.
It's just, yeah, it's amateur lying, right? He's doubling down on the lie. It's also why, and like, why is anyone, Daniel, why are you fooled on April Fool's Day? Like, can't you just automatize in your head that people are going to try and say stupid shit on April 1st? Just everyone stop talking.
But it's not even a majority of people, right? So if I'm on social media or Twitter, whatever, and I'm going through things and someone's like, I have cancer and it's April 1. Do I go, ha, you're hilarious?
Yes, like, you do. Because then if they say you're a dick, you say April Fools.
See?
Like, it's not even the majority of people. It's this stupidly vocal plurality that it's just annoying to me. I just hate that this is part of our culture.
Yeah, actually, we at work, we have someone who is from China and recently moved to America. He did not really get that it was April Fool's, and there were a bunch of like joke like meetings, and he actually tried to show up to one of them. And so we had
talk about the hellacious life he lives on April 1st.
Yeah, it's like, jeez. Oh, sorry, this was April Fool's.
See, I feel bad for that because that guy doesn't know, and that's kind of nobody fucking told him, which is dick on your guys' part.
There's a whole day where reality doesn't matter. It's horrible.
Why are you fucking objectivist? It's got nothing to do with reality.
I hate this. I hate this day. I hate everyone who participates in this day. It should burn for all eternity in hell.
No, I'm going to take a similar but less hardline stance. I think if you want to prank people on April Fool's Days, do it off the internet. Do it to people you actually know, okay? That's the problem.
No, don't prank anyone ever. It's dumb. Be an adult.
Next year, somebody in Daniel's office shake his hand and have his hand get electrocuted. Do one of those things. Have him sit on a fart thing. All right? Teach this man some joviality.
I have been... You joke. I have been the victim. That's right. I get to be a victim of many practical jokes in my office, partially because I will not retaliate. I just let them happen, and then I move on with my life.
See, I never understood that about bullying. People are like, if you just ignore the bullies, they go away. Like, I personally would only want to prank someone who would prank me back, because then it becomes fun, and you get in this loop of trying to outdo each other. But some people only want to prank people or pick on people who won't fight back because they're pussies. So it sounds like your office is full of pussies, is what I just heard.
Alas, some of them were amusing. I'll give them that. I had someone put a wall of Donald Trump up in my office, which I thought was partially a hate crime, actually, now that I think about it.
Well, that's like when I worked the job and somebody had... Somebody had Jets posters, and I put up a bunch of Patriots pictures on top of the Jets pictures.
Yeah. So speaking of a joke, Uncle Joe Biden this week had a rough week. Uncle Joe, touchy Uncle Joe, is attempting to deal with what NBC News calls his personal space problem. Less than 2 days after he promised to be more respectful with his physical contact as part of an effort to take down a growing controversy, the former vice president cracked jokes about the issue. At a speech to the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Conference in Washington, D.C., Biden opened his remarks by joking that he'd received permission to hug the group's president, Lonnie Stephenson, whom Biden had embraced after being introduced by him. "I just want you to know I had permission to hug Lonnie," said Biden, who is said to be gearing up for a presidential run. The line, of course, drew applause and laughter from the audience. But guess what, Justin? People were outraged on the
internet. People were mad at Justin Bieber because other people can't get pregnant?
Yes. In fact, people said that it's clearly shown that he didn't reflect on it, that he was out of touch, he didn't
really
get it.
Don't we want
him
to be out of touch?
Very droll.
I thought you'd like that dad joke. I thought you'd like it.
On Wednesday, Biden posted a Twitter video about 2 minutes long saying that he understands that social norms are changing and that what he viewed as gestures of support and encouragement that he's made to women and some men have sometimes made them uncomfortable. I get it. I hear what you're saying. I understand it. I'll be more mindful. That's my responsibility, he said. Justin, Is this something that will actually make you defend touchy Uncle Joe?
Well, that's what I was going to facetiously say. I was going to say, we're on Biden's side on this one, right?
I think so. I'm this to me is just part of...
Is it he invading our side? Isn't that what's happening? He's getting really, really close to our side.
Uncomfortably really close to our
right.
side.
And, well, no, this is what inevitably close. Happened. Right, William, you're 100% correct. This is what inevitably happens. I'm being facetious by saying we, you know, because I like to make fun of collectivism. But for me personally, this is when things get so extreme, everyone will start moving more towards the middle and they'll start moving more towards the mid side, right? They'll see both sides. They'll be like, you're crazy and you're crazy. And they'll start to think more rationally when everyone else is being irrational. This is a perfect example of this. This is somebody who he's dealing with this irrational outrage, anti-masculine culture to the point that his behavior, which is completely normal. And I say that because we haven't heard anything about this until he decided to run for president. It's like, oh, wait, that old white guy wants to run for president. We need to find some reason he's not in line with the purity of social justice or the purity of the new left. So we attack him for this. So he's been fine up until the moment he decided to run for president. And now that he is being attacked in that way, he has to actually look at reality. And if he actually looks at reality, he sees he didn't do anything wrong. And then he's literally witnessing the farce. He's literally making jokes about it because the only way you can deal with this is to make fun of it. So good on Joe Biden. Good on Joe Biden.
Oh, God.
And it's ridiculous that everyone else is okay. I mean, you're saying, oh, God, but what has Joe Biden really done wrong? I mean, he just exists.
Sniffing people's hair.
It's, he just exists. That's to name me one wrong. Thing Joe Biden has actually done.
Smelled.
He doesn't do anything.
A female's hair.
William, even if Joe has done nothing wrong, has he not helped create the exact culture of woke terribleness that is going after him now? So isn't it a little bit of Schadenfreude?
Yeah, I think you're giving him way too much credit. Uncle Joe is a bumbling fool, so I don't think he could have created any sort of change in the culture. He certainly participated in it. But
Certainly the moral encourager of
this
it.
This is. I'm only going to in the way of the midside. I'm only going to half accept what Justin's saying, and I would add to it and say that the problem here is you can't give someone a feedback about his personal space without it becoming a Me Too issue. That's the problem here. Like, his behavior isn't proper for a professional to do with strangers. And that's what he is. He's a professional, right? His politician is his job. He's in the things like I've seen.
Hold on. Politicians are known for literally kissing babies. Like, that's not an invasion of personal space. That baby's been kissed by like two people. It's in its entire life.
It's also dangerous.
Okay, it's dangerous too. Thank you. I'm just saying.
The other thing Justin's wrong about, since we're on a roll here, is this stuff has been coming up for years, since the early 2000s, about him being too touchy and being in people's personal space. This was well hidden in the when he was during the last election cycle that he was involved in. People were talking about it, but we didn't have the Me Too culture. And now that we have hashtag Me Too, Justin's right about this part, where because of the Me Too outrage culture, people are trying to manufacture this into a thing. But it's really just a story. This isn't a story about toxic masculinity, right? This is just one guy not understanding personal space.
Yeah, I sort of have a point that fits somewhere on that spectrum as well, which is I think if you look at any individual instance of what touchy Uncle Joe is doing here, I don't think it's particularly wrong. I think it is. I think someone, and it's however many years on the planet, should have taken him aside and said, Joe, stop touching people like that. Makes them uncomfortable, you moron. So I wonder why that didn't happen. But that being said,
it did, but he's the goofy old grandfather that he doesn't listen to anybody.
Yeah, but sometimes
like, oh, that's just Joe.
The goofy old grandfather is a cover for I want to be the lascivious old grandfather. And that's partially the issue here, I think, which is that I think there is something weird about Joe Biden. I'm reading a book about high conflict personality disorders, and one of the tests that they use is a very layman's test, which is simply like, do you think 90% of people would engage in this behavior? Like, would find this sort of behavior acceptable? And I think the answer here is no. I don't think, 90% of people would find this behavior acceptable. And then it's like, well, why is this 10? Why, you know, this falls into a very small sliver of what is considered acceptable behavior. And
based upon that standard, my entire life is high conflict.
No. Well, I mean, you're literally high conflict, but it's not a personality disorder. It's a lifestyle choice. So, but I mean, there like something came out, for instance, of like he went when he was in the White House as the vice president. Like he went used to go swimming in the mornings nude. Like even when his Secret Service officers were there, and some of them happened to be women, for instance. Like that's a little weird. Like again, it's not. I don't think it's Me Too behavior, but it's certainly there's something wrong with Joe Biden. He needs to reset.
Joe's just used to those Roman baths from back when he was a kid. So
I guess so.
He's just longing for those days.
Come on, guys. A beta male is going to beta male. What he's doing is he's like, well, did you ever see that episode of How I Met Your Mother? The naked man works 1 out of 3 times. So if you're just naked, they made up the statistic 1 out of 3 times. But the idea that is he's putting the possibility out there. Right. So there are women around
when he's the vice president and it's his Secret Service agents.
His entire career is built upon just emasculating himself and being like, you know what? I'm going to do nothing. I'm just going to let Barack Obama be president because I want to show how in touch I am and how evolved I am as a man. He's like the definition of a beta male. If the worst he does is this.
Look, I'm not saying he's Harvey Weinstein. I'm saying if I were friends with Joe Biden 10 years ago, I would have taken him aside and said, Joe, what the F? You can't do this to people. And I think having those sorts of uncomfortable conversations with people who are close to you can be a good thing for them, for you, for the culture, et cetera. Sort of foreshadowing maybe something that's going to come up in life on the midside later on. Sometimes you do have to have difficult conversations, even though that sucks. And apparently no one is okay enough with Joe Biden to actually tell him, stop touching people.
Or they will only use it as part of the hashtag Me Too stuff, right? Like, it's a conversation not about Joe, but about all men.
Right. That's the bigger problem here is this become an agenda, right? Either they're getting attention for themselves or they're using it to prop up a movement. No one actually gives a shit about Joe. But again, that's what he's done to himself. He's made himself a giant pawn. In all of this, that's literally his life. The dude's also 76 years old. Like, do you really expect him to change his behavior? He's not going to be president.
No, that's what I'm saying. Where is friends?
Joe Biden doesn't have friends.
Where are the people he pays to pretend to be his friends?
They don't care. They're using him.
Nonetheless, speaking of people being used, hundreds of people took part in a nude photo shoot for female empowerment in Spain. About 1,300 participants of both sexes shed their clothes in broad daylight in the Spanish city of Valencia as part of a photo op staged by U.S. photographer Spencer Tunick, who is best known throughout the world for organizing large-scale nude photo shoots. According to the Daily Star, the photo op was conducted as part of the Intramurs Festival in an area cordoned off by police officers. At one point of the event, female participants stepped on their prone male counterparts in an apparent show of power, helping them to get up afterwards in a display of kinship, the newspaper added. The photographer himself claimed that he sought to show female empowerment and to draw an analogy between the architectural construction and the reconstruction of the human being, of the change of minds and hearts. Justin, was your heart and mind changed by all the people?
My heart and mind was changed to pay attention to social media and the media even less. Hundreds of people, Daniel, hundreds of people in Spain made worldwide news. Hundreds. Are we at this low in our culture where we report on hundreds of people? Am I the only one who thinks that's insane?
Well, it depends on what they're doing.
Well, I think this fits into...
They're getting naked!
This fits into what we've talked about, the pattern now. It, basically, all journalism has become writing about a tweet or Instagram post. So this fits right into that. This is someone tweeted this, and so someone wrote a story about it.
Right, 100%. And it actually fits into what we were just talking about in the last time, Daniel. Like, can you imagine being a dude who actually participates in this?
No.
That's the thing, right? So there are two things here.
Hundreds
One,
of naked women?
Well,
I'm
okay,
running away. I'm running away.
You are running away, but that's the point I'm making. That was the second point I was going to get to. The second point I was going to get to was, this is what I was saying about the Joe Biden thing. These guys are just, they're so beta that they're like, man, there are going to be hundreds of naked women there, and I'm going to be naked? Man, I'm going to be naked around naked women. I'm going to show up and do this. So it's just the idea that, oh, man, maybe something can happen. But then also, if you're a dude and you let somebody take a picture of you naked with a naked woman stepping on top of you, what the fuck is wrong with you? Wake the fuck up.
Yeah, I hope they're literally not asleep, because that would be a surprise when you wake up. But this just seems like an overall bad idea, William. But it's a particularly bad idea because this is considered art. And why don't you talk about how terrible that is for a second?
I think it is.
That's not even a question. You just told them what to say.
I think it's great. I think it's great. This is exactly what art is supposed to do. This is concretizing an idea. This is what feminism is today. It is a understanding that the only way to empower women is for them to destroy and subjugate men. If that's what your idea of empowerment is, you are evil. And this, if this is something that you connect with as a feminist, this shows the evil that is in your heart. And I think this is great. This is exactly what art is supposed to do. This, when I look at this, I don't see female empowerment. I see females subjugating, right? That's what they want to see. They think that men subjugated women, and so now it's their turn. This is perfect. This is exactly what art is supposed to do.
Spencer Tunick, this photographer known for taking nude photos, could have been at the Reardon birthday party, Justin, alongside any number of other Ayn Rand villains who wrote books about, you know, what you think and composing horrible art and music, etc. Can you imagine making your life's work? I'm going to photograph a bunch of naked dudes and chicks laying down in various places. And this is my life's calling.
I mean, I could, but if I did, I would imagine I was a porn photographer.
Well, right. I mean, absent the obvious, because they're not doing that, at least on his camera. This is your life's calling. You're going to photograph naked people. Like, and not even like in an artistic, classical model type of way or sculpture type of way, but in just, you know, just masses of humanity laying naked on the ground.
Well, I have a question. Who can make naked people show up? Like a bigger naked audience, this photographer or that Guinness Book of World Record orgy that we were covering in Vegas? Which one has more people show up?
I think this one, because wasn't the orgy like 500 people or something like that? I don't remember.
Then the second question, which has the better looking naked people?
Oh,
the photographer or the orgy?
I think that's a virtual tie, I suspect. But my point
when
is...
When does hundreds become thousands? I mean, like...
For the orgy? Man, that's a lot of condoms.
No. I'm saying... I don't think... Are they using condoms in an orgy? I don't know. But
I hope so.
Not what I'm saying is, at 900, is it still hundreds? You get what I'm saying? Like, when you said hundreds in the news article, I assumed it was like 300, maybe.
No, it's 1,300.
It's a little
better.
Pretty
sure I said that at the top.
It's a little better. It's a little bit. Marginally.
No, my point here, Justin, is...
So can I describe my penis then as centimeters?
Life is short.
Is that more impressive?
Life is limited. Your value choices are limited in the number of things you can accomplish in your life. This man has decided for a significant portion of his only existence, that he is going to choose to take photos of naked people laying around places. What type of psychology is that?
I actually don't have an answer to the psychology question. I don't. All I can think about, like, when you're saying this is, like, could be doing worse things.
Could you? I don't know. This sounds like the worst existence in the history of time.
I don't know. What's worse, doing this or just sitting around tweeting all day?
I think I'd rather be tweeting all day. I think I'd rather be a coal miner.
Oh, 100% I'd rather be a coal miner, without a doubt. That's actually productive. You're actually creating something. You're turning the earth into something. I sit around and tweet all day.
It's my job, jackass.
I didn't mean like that. I wouldn't consider your job sitting around and tweeting all day. I'm talking about these people who sit around and tweet all day about the same issue over and over and over again, and it's not their job. That's what I'm talking about.
Feel like you have an unconscious bias here, as do many of us, apparently, according to this Forbes article. This Forbes article is currently titled, I'll explain that in a minute, it's currently titled, Does Unconscious Bias Affect Our Sustainable Lifestyle Choices? So here's how the article begins. When a person walks out of the grocery store holding an eco-friendly canvas bag instead of a plastic bag, what gender do you think they are? Oy vey. Most likely, your unconscious bias answers that they are female. This is the type of answer Dr. Aaron Bro, yes, Dr. Aaron Bro of Utah State University, is trying to get to the bottom of through his research. Bro co-authored a paper with professors Dude and Mann, no, just kidding, with professors from four other universities to understand how gender norms affect sustainable decision-making. They report data from seven experiments that included 2,000 participants from the U.S. and China, and what they found was remarkable. They found that both men and women associated doing something good for the environment with being, quote, more feminine. This unearths a deeply held unconscious bias that Bro and team called the green feminine stereotype. Once this unconscious bias is revealed, it has the potential to help society shift our increasingly precarious relationship with the environment for the better. If it remains hidden, it has the potential to greatly damage our environment permanently. The reason I say that this article is titled now is because it's seemingly every time we refresh the page, there's a new title. When I sent this article earlier to you, Justin, it had the title of something like, Is Toxic Masculinity the Reason for Global Climate Change? So what do you think is going on here in this article? I mean, the point, you know, being the point, but also what the hell is going on here with the journalism?
Well, I think I'll let William handle the journalism question because I think he has a really great way of approaching it. And I think his point about it is great, and I don't want to steal that from him. As far as the journalism, I find – not the journalism. As far as the point, I find the use of the term unconscious bias really, really interesting because I've never heard of the concept of unconscious bias before. I've heard of subconscious bias where the idea that what your brain is working on, what your brain is thinking about when you're not actively – intentionally thinking about it. You know, it's the idea that you have a question and you put it in the back of your head and you're standing in the shower and the answer comes to you later. That's subconscious. And it's sort of like the premises you don't acknowledge. But unconscious, doesn't unconscious mean like your brain is like asleep or you're like not operating at that moment? Like if you get knocked unconscious, you're not doing anything, right? So the idea of unconscious bias is really interesting. And I think they're doing that because they want to make it seem like their position is the thinking position, and any position against them is the non-thinking position. They're trying to subtly use these words to change it in that way because they're already, I know this because they're getting out ahead of what my response is to this critique, right?
Well, Justin, before you do that, I want to let you know that I've increasingly come to see social justice as a form of religion, meaning it's just all dogma. And unconscious bias is part of their trinity. It's their Holy Spirit. It's their unmoving, unchanging, always omnipresent force that directs people's lives.
Right, and they have to do that. They have to do that because of exactly what I'm going to say. So I agree 100%. And the reason they're saying unconscious rather than subconscious is what I'm about to say. They say that this is an issue of wanting to seem more masculine or not, right? They're saying that they're smuggling in the premise that we're all thinking about the environment. And if we make choices that are anti-environment, that we're doing it just to appear more masculine. No, that is factually incorrect. I do not, it's like God, right? Throughout my day, I do not think about God because I am an atheist. I do not make choices based upon God. It's the same thing. I do not make choices based upon the environment or not. I do not think about the environment. So that's why they're calling that unconscious bias, because they want to say the fact that you're not even thinking of it means you're so obsessed with your own masculinity that you don't even think about it. It's not even a subconscious thing. You're that worried about it. It's the same thing. Like, let's put it this way. The Walmart gift card example they gave, right? Oh, well, if men got something that was a pink Walmart gift card, they were so worried about what they were thinking, what other people thought of them, that they would buy something more masculine. Okay, first of all, I'm going to ignore the fact that how are we defining products as masculine or feminine? I mean, isn't that against their whole, like, things aren't gendered? Things should be gender neutral. So now things are gendered? That doesn't make any sense. But I don't think about what other people think of me. If you give me a Walmart gift card, I go, oh, I really needed X, Y, and Z. I can go buy those things now. That's my first thought. My first thought isn't, man, what's the cashier going to think of me when I hand this to them? Even more to the point, if I'm worried about that, I go to self-checkout. Hey, teenagers. Hey, college students. If you're worried about people, what people think of you when you're buying condoms, use the self-checkout.
Or buy online.
Yeah. But I mean, sometimes you need condoms right away. I mean, you need condoms right away and you got to go to CVS and you got to put the magnums down and the black guy at the register looks at you crazy. Like, it happens.
And then he exchanges them for a different size. So, William, why don't you dive into the journalism side of this a little bit? Because I originally sent this article, the headline was ridiculous. And I thought there was just, and I could be making this up with my unconscious bias. I thought there was other stuff in here that now seems to be gone. But yeah, I don't know about that.
You are absolutely correct. So what I've done here is, I'll make it available for folks on Discord. The original article, the title was, "What if toxic masculinity is the reason for climate change?" And I did a diff. I used the Wayback Machine and did a diff. So that's a fancy word of spotting all the differences. We do it in code when we write code all the time. And of the original article...
Oh, I thought that was some gay term for dad I fuck. Diff.
That's dilf. That's something else.
No, that's like to fuck. If you're actually fucking the person who you would like to
at
fuck.
At this exact moment.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've never used diff. That term. Exactly three paragraphs are the same between the two stories.
Really?
Yep. All wow. of the changes, there's 21 removals, 16 additions. Some of it is just editing, right? Like putting V's in or commas, stuff like that. But everything in the article that uses the word stereotype was masculine stereotype. Everything that was written Ooh. That mentions femininity in a positive light was in the article that you can see now was actually denigrating masculinity in the original article. So let me give you a particularly interesting example. So they talk about the feminine design elements like pink and floral selected to threaten stereotypes. Originally, that was selected to threaten masculine stereotypes. Same thing in that same paragraph. Or another gift card that was designed to not threaten masculinity. Original, it was changed to or another gift card that was designed to not threaten stereotypes. So this was written against men originally, and then someone decided to come back and change it to be more less overt, more covert with its hatred of men.
Did they really succeed, though?
No, I don't think they did. But here's the thing. Here's why this is happening.
If we just remove the modifier masculine, no one will figure this out.
Yeah, here's why this is happening. I think this is we've seen this more and more. I think this has actually now become an algorithmic approach. You make a super clickbaity article, have all the buzzwords, the social justice buzzwords, have a controversial title, get it out there on social media, and by the time people start paying attention, as it goes viral, you change it and make it more subtle so that people still look at the article, still look at your ads, But they're like, oh, this isn't as big of a deal as people were making it out. These folks on Twitter that were tweeting about this story are crazy. And the funny thing is, because of the way Twitter and Facebook and other places work, the original title is still there. But then when you click on it, the title's different. So you can even have people thinking that maybe this person made up the title, right? Like, was that your take on the title? Or was it the actual title of the article? I think this is a strategy to get your quote unquote news stories out there. And we're going to see this more and more.
And there is nothing on this page, by the way, that indicates that certain things were changed or that the title was original. Give it to the New York Times, who does this all the time. They will at least put at the bottom all the major significant corrections they made to the article. The most famous of which is the Aleppo article. Just Google that. I don't want to get into it. But it seems rather insidious that this is nominally a journalistic outlet that has decided we're going to draw people in. And then once we have the people and we have the clicks, we're going to change things to make the article something other than what it was. That's horrible. And Forbes used to be a respectable publication. I remember a while ago, it used to be a big deal to be published in Forbes. Now that any Joe Schmo woke social justice author can publish in it, it's become this clickbaity, trashy website, which, I mean, honestly, I'd rather go to BuzzFeed, because at least in BuzzFeed, they're upfront about it. Here, well, they still hide behind the veneer of Forbes.
I think we here at the Midside can come up with a solution. What I did here was look it up on the Wayback Machine and then do a diff. This sounds like a great plugin for our browsers. We could use this on all the news websites where it does exactly that. It checks the Wayback Machine and then points out all the differences in the article as you're browsing the web. I think this would
be great.
Does
that exist?
No, I'm saying we should create it. We've got enough Midsiders here that can do that.
So. Okay, what is it? The what are we going to call it? Like the farce identifier?
Farce detector. There you go.
Farce detector. The there we go. Farce it's like detector. A fart detector. It's a farce detector. Find out what smells. Is it silent but deadly?
But who knows? Maybe somebody's already created this, but I think that's what we need to combat this.
I like it.
It is a call to arms. Also, right. I wanted to ask you, William, isn't this also a way for the news stations to get the news sources to get ahead of the growing trend of Facebook identifying fake news? This is a way to get around that tool that Facebook has?
I'm not sure I'm following. Are you saying they can change it by the time Facebook notices it so it doesn't look as
right.
bad? I think that would be a good way to get around Facebook as well.
Yeah. So it's a war. The war is
it's
always
a new,
on.
New terrible era. Well, now you sound like Andrew Breitbart. The war. You do. He used to say that all the time.
Well, you know what? Some people aren't wrong all the time. They're just wrong most
Andrew
of the
Breitbart
time.
Andrew Breitbart was right almost all the time. It's what his stupid website evolved into that became an atrocity.
Speaking of atrocities, I saw a couple movies this week. Actually, one of them wasn't an atrocity. But we're going to talk about it anyway in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Focused on Midsiders out there, if you want to join the conversation, if you want to influence the show, you should join our Discord channel. This week I talked to people about what movies I should see. There's always the ongoing conversation of what trailers we should use, and Midsider Josh shared a Rucka Rucka video in there that was a parody of Eminem. So we got a lot going on in the Discord channel, and we want you to contribute to it because it can only make the show better. Maybe you can get on there and you can share your farce detector with us so we can start using that and promoting it on the show. And if you make it, I will every episode say install the farce detector created by Midsider you. Yeah, I'll literally say Midsider you before I say your name just to be a dick, but okay.
I hope it's an Asian guy named you.
Have we penetrated the Asian market yet? Don't answer that.
Careful.
Careful.
Wait, have you? Have you not?
I thought you were deep into the Asian market.
Okay. So this week I saw two movies using my AMC pass because that's what I'm using now instead of movie pass. Although, did you see that price went up even more? So it's $20 right now, but if in California, it's going to be like $23 a month. These people cannot figure out how to do this without losing money and without making us actually pay full price for a ticket. It's ridiculous. Anyway, so the two movies I saw The Best of Enemies and I saw Shazam. The Best of Enemies stars Taraji P. Henson and Sam Rockwell, and it's about a town in North Carolina, Durham, in 1971, where a black school burns down and they have to figure out what to do with the black students. And the white Ku Klux Klan members do not want to let the black students integrate into the white school, which, by the way, wasn't school integration already passed at this point? This was after Brown versus the Board of Education, right?
Yes, 57.
Right. So I didn't even understand that point in the movie. I didn't understand why, like, they didn't just, like, get the police or the National Guard involved or something to force integration like they did in all the other places back then. But that's a whole different discussion. So in the movie, they hold a thing called a charrette where they take the two sides and they make them over 4 days. They, like, lock them into school and make them discuss what they should do with this problem. How should they should solve the problem? And throughout the movie, the Ku Klux Klan leader, Sam Rockwell, he's literally the president of the local Ku Klux Klan leader to the group, to the fact that he doesn't even let black people fill up at his gas station. And Taraji P. Henson get to know each other and become friends. Except here's the thing. There's not really much shown about Sam Rockwell's development as a character. His character doesn't really change. And then there's the climax of the movie where they have to vote and they need 7 votes to pass integration as one of the resolutions. And the Ku Klux Klan intimidates this young girl on the white person's side and she votes against it. And they thought she was going to be the person to vote for integration. So it's the last vote. It's Sam Rockwell's vote. And he stands up to vote. And he tears up his Ku Klux Klan membership. He's like, well, I don't have a need for this anymore because I don't believe this shit anymore. I vote yes on school integration. But it makes no sense. There's no reason for him to have changed or anything. The movie doesn't make sense. This came across as a made-for-TV movie that was released in theaters. They had a real-life... I guess this was a real-life story. This was a real-life story, and they didn't even write it properly. They kept, you know, I read interviews and stuff where they said, we didn't want to make this Hollywood. There was no need to. It was just already a good story. Well, if it's already a good story, that doesn't mean you don't dramatize it or anything. You have to make it make sense. You have to earn it. So the turn and everything was not earned. It was pandering. It was just pandering to their audience. It's the performances were good. Taraji P. Henson was very good in it. She's a tremendous actress. But it was just a made-for-TV movie.
Hmm. And then, Brown v. Board of Education was 54, by the way.
Right. Sorry. So explain to me how that works, right? Why? I don't understand, Daniel. Explain to me legally. Couldn't they have just already, over those 20 years, brought this to court and the courts could have used the government to force the schools to integrate?
Well, courts can't do anything because courts don't have a military or police force. But
you get what I'm saying, though, right?
Well, it's an important distinction because courts ruled a lot of things, including post-Civil War. You know, they made some really good rulings about, you know, the 13th, 14th, 15th amendments that were just essentially ignored by the states. And that's what happened in many of the southern states is governors ignored them. And we sort of had this federalism issue up until the 60s where we thought, well, we can't force the states to do certain things and we're not going to send in, you know, armed guards to make them do whatever. So some southern states got away with a lot of horrible things because either some courts in their states ignored certain rulings and ruled differently or governors ignored things. So it probably wasn't legal, but what are you going to do if people won't enforce the laws?
Right. So there was a more interesting story here that wasn't done, right?
Clearly.
Right. Instead of making this about the corruption of the entire town. And they did have one scene, right? There was one really good scene where Sam Rockwell's character is talking to like the mayor of the town. And the mayor is essentially being like, just do what you're told. Just do what you're told. This isn't about race. This is about keeping me in power. Do what you're told. Don't integrate these people. Keep the white people together so I can stay in power. I'm distilling it down. It wasn't this plain, right? It wasn't this out there in the scene. And Sam Rockwell's character realizes, wait, I'm just being used here. And he's like, I don't want anything to do with you anymore. And like, if that was the story about how this was being used for people's political ends on either side, and these two people met in the middle and realized it should be about like their individual values, it could have been a great story. But that was like a minimal thing in the plot. And likewise, they sort of did that, where Sam Rockwell's character apparently had an extremely retarded child. And I mean that in the clinical sense, where, okay, if you want to know the one thing that will automatically destroy me in any movie, it's so tragic when someone has Down syndrome to the point that it's just like they can't even function at all. And that was what his kid was. Like, he had to be committed to, he had Down syndrome so badly that he had to be committed to like a psych ward. And like, he goes in there and sees the kid, and it's just like, that destroys me, because that's just so tragic. Cause it's so that person's existence, he couldn't control that. The parents couldn't control that. It's just the random luck of life puts them in that way. And they use that as a plot device where Taraji P. Henson's character uses her political wherewithal to get the son moved to another room, because they put him in a room eventually with someone else who has mental problems, and it makes that, you know, that kid suffer even more. And that's part of why they start to like each other, because she did something nice for him. And there's a story in there about values and valuing each other and helping each other, but instead it becomes about political maneuvering. So just the whole thing was just, I don't want to say I felt dirty, but I was just kind of like, yeah, this isn't for me. All right. And then the other movie I saw was Shazam. Shazam is the latest DC movie. It's about this kid, Billy Batson, this 14-year-old who a wizard finds him and names him his champion. And then whenever he says the word Shazam, he transforms into Chuck, who can now have superpowers. Zachary Levi playing a superhero. And he has to learn how to use these magic powers, because as champion, he has to keep the 7 deadly sins from getting out into the world. And the 7 deadly sins have taken over Mark Strong and are using him as their vessel to be able to make him champion so they can rule the world with the 7 deadly sins. This movie was very much Harry Potter meets Disney. That was done for a reason. They were trying to make it about family. And Billy Batson was abandoned as a child by his mother, and he felt like he doesn't belong anywhere, and he felt alone. And the movie is about him accepting his family. And then there's an end that makes that very important, when you're talking about like the wizard also had 7 thrones around him, and he was the last remaining one. The problem with this movie is twofold. One, because it's Disney and Harry Potter-esque, even though it's PG-13, some of it is very hokey. Like, going to meet the wizard, it's just the way he's dressed and everything, it's just absurd. You're like, this is coming across very, very poorly. It's coming across very, very poorly. And then there's this whole interesting thematic approach about when you feel alone and you feel no one's on your side and you only look out for yourself and you don't know how to value other people. But because this story is couched in altruism, it doesn't become about learning how to properly value other people and have that traitor relationship with them. It becomes about, and this is a paraphrase, but a nearly direct quote from the movie, that power has no value if you don't share it with other people. And of course, because of the rules of the 7 thrones and that the wizard basically forces him to take on the powers of Shazam, he's forced to accept that as true. The rules of the universe they've set up make it so that power is only valuable if you share it with other people. He necessarily cannot succeed on his own. And that, even though the movie, look, this was a very, very fun movie. It was amusing. I laughed a lot. The performances were good. Some of the reveals were cool. It's just that there's not a lot to it. It was just like, when I say Disney movie, you ever seen those movies like when Bruce Willis is the kid or things like that? It's that kind of a movie. That's what it feels like. One of those, not Disney animated movies, but those Disney movies made for like the PG audience about kids and things like that. Sort of like The Parent Trap with Lindsay Lohan. It's like that type of a movie, but you cross it with Harry Potter, that kind of a thing. It just, there was even a reference to Big in there, right? There was a reference to Big where the villain Mark Strong is fighting Zachary Levi in the toy store and they end up on a giant piano at one point. And I was like, oh, that's a Big reference. Which is cool. Like, I get what they're going for with the whole, the 14-year-old transforms into Chuck to that age. So I get the Big reference. But Big, even though it was PG, it was approached in a much more adult manner. So, look, it's enjoyable. I'm not going to say it's a bad movie and not to see it. I think it's worth seeing. I think see it at some point, maybe if you see it on Netflix. Daniel, after leaving, I thought this was a movie Fiza would really enjoy, and I would thought maybe she would bring you to it and you would enjoy it, even though it wasn't ideal. But let me put it this way. The whole thing ultimately culminates in the mid-credits scene, or not even the mid-credits, the pre-credits. So, you know, when you set up the sequel, well, Mark Strong's character, after his powers have been taken away and the seven deadly sins have been put back into their ball, into the secret lair where they're being, you know, they're kept away from the world. He's there. He's like going insane, trying to figure out like how to get back and get everything back. And a talking caterpillar convinces him that they're going to band together to fight back against Shazam in the sequel. He obviously doesn't talking say in the sequel. But talking like caterpillar, Alice in right.
Wonderland?
Well, that, exactly. It's like at least Alice in Wonderland used the whole guys and metaphor of drugs to explain a talking caterpillar. Instead, this was a caterpillar that literally had like a voice model. And I was like, this is absurd. I was like, this is really absurd. And then I stayed for all the way to the post-credit scene. And it's an Aquaman joke because in the movie, the Shazam is testing his powers. And they do a one about, can you talk to fish? And he's trying to talk to a fish in a fishbowl. And Zachary Levi is like, why would I want to talk to fish? That's a stupid power. And the kid was wearing an Aquaman shirt, who's helping him test his powers. He's like, I don't know, so you can have an army under the sea. And he's holding his Aquaman shirt. And I literally said out loud, I stayed all this time for that stupid fucking scene. So don't stay for the post credits. But look, if you want to see a movie and you don't want to like, sometimes you don't want to exert a lot of mental energy and you just be like, hey, I want to see a movie that is generally benevolent and I'll have a good time with. That's the kind of movie Shazam is. It's got, you know, the problems of our culture with the underlying altruistic issues, which is why people are saying it's so great and they're raising it up. Because look, this is the agenda now. If a superhero movie has altruism in it, it's going to get positive reviews and it's going to be 75 to 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. If it doesn't, it's going to get reamed. That is the only thing they are reviewing superhero movies on. So you can't trust Rotten Tomatoes. You can't trust critics on it. So if you can get past that, sort of like Black Panther, right? Black Panther was well made. And if you can get past that, ultimately it's about tribalism, you're not going to hate it. It's enjoyable.
Boring.
Put it on that level. But not as evil.
Trying to watch it, bored to death.
Black Panther?
Yep.
Interesting. Well, I don't know what that says about you. Just don't like the Marvel formula, huh?
I thought Infinity Wars was fine, except that it made the villain right in the end.
Right, but it's also a tragic ending. So in a tragedy, it's okay to make the villain right.
I'm not going to go there. I don't think it is okay to make the villain right. And you might say that the villain is inevitable, but I don't think that makes them right.
Okay, well, we can squabble about the word white, right at white, right at a later time. I think he wins. But yeah, so Black Panther, I would say that Black Panther isn't paced as well. That's the nice thing about this movie is you don't ever get bored during it. But a lot of modern movies, even in the Best of Enemies, I nearly fell asleep at one point because it was so boring. There's just pacing is so bad in modern movies. Am I the only one who notices that there's really bad pacing in movies nowadays?
Well, it's because all, they feel like as long as they cuts. give you as long as they give you an action scene every 7 minutes, it doesn't matter what they do in between those 7 minutes.
Yep. Right. And William's right. It becomes all jump cuts because of that, right?
Yeah. If you want to see a good movie named Best of Enemies, check out the documentary on Netflix about the Gore Vidal, William F. Buckley Jr. debates.
Well, that's the Best of Enemies, and this movie is the Best of Enemies.
Oh, so well, you can tell the difference. God. Clearly different.
Okay, well, you know what? When we're talking about movies you should or shouldn't see, I think that means it's time for Trailer Takedown. As always, I usually post the Trailer Takedown preview on Saturday mornings, so you can go to themidside.com/podcast there and go then, and you can watch the trailers either before the episode, during the episode, after the episode, however you want to do it. That's how you can watch the trailers ahead of time.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
My Spy is Dave Bautista doing his best impersonation of The Rock. He's an incompetent CIA agent who has been told this is his last mission to get it right before he's fired, and he is made by an 8-year-old girl who then blackmails him into training him to be a spy. Her. Before we talk about this movie, I want to pause this discussion and say Dave Bautista has been cast in Army of the Dead by Zack Snyder. What do you think of that? Daniel William, really quickly, reactions to that.
Was The Rock not available?
Did The Rock cost too much?
I mean, I really think that that's what it is, right? It's just if you want to have a movie with The Rock, but you don't want to pay as much or he's not available, you have Dave Bautista, right?
Or John Cena.
Yeah.
Okay, who do you like better, John Cena or Dave Bautista?
So far, John Cena.
Yeah,
but I think Batista's earlier in his career, right? Yeah.
You guys are racist. You picked the white guy over the Hispanic guy. How dare you?
Every time.
I like John Cena better, but I'm also from Massachusetts, and he's from Boston. So, I mean,
bias. I have unconscious bias.
I was just going to say that's my unconscious bias. I don't know. I think it's interesting that Snyder casted Dave Bautista. I think he fits the Ayn Rand aesthetic, does he not?
Sure.
Yeah, I think visually and acting wise, I think he can hit the marks. I'm not tilted over that.
Seems to be competent. This role is probably a bad choice, other than a payday. But
what role was probably the Snyder role?
No, My Spy, the movie we're talking about.
Okay, well, we were talking about the Snyder one, so let's talk about My Spy now. I guess I'm more forgiving of this movie than you. Daniel, this reminds me very much of a couple Rock movies. There was the one where he was the Tooth Fairy, if you remember.
Oi.
You remember that one?
I do remember.
Wow.
Right, then there was the one, The Game Plan, where both of these movies are about him dealing with young kids and how they're helping a better person. So this seems very much like an early movie in The Rock's career. So for me, this is one I would see. I might not necessarily see it in theaters. It depends on what else is out around it. Bautista looked capable in it. He looked amusing. The little girl looked good. So I don't know when I would see this, but I would be okay with seeing this movie. This is a hug for me.
Netflix and hug.
Yeah, probably. Daniel?
He seems less comedically adept than The Rock.
That's true.
I think he worked in Guardians of the Galaxy because that character was comedically inept. So it sort of hooked up there. I did laugh twice at this trailer. I laughed when she pours the fish over as a distraction, although they ruined the joke by cutting to the fish before she pours it over. And then I laughed at the end. I forget what the joke was. But it seems like it's well written, and the young girl seems like a tremendous actress. She really does quite well with this script. But I just know it's not something I'm going to see. It may very well be a perfectly fine family movie to take your daughter for some female empowerment. But I don't have a daughter, and I'm never going to see this. So tackle.
So my summary of this movie is a vindictive and manipulative girl who can't get any friends manipulates a spy to be a better person. No, I don't think I want to see this. I'm going to tackle it.
Tackle.
That was the least benevolent take on that movie possible.
You didn't see it that way? I guess because I didn't laugh. It just looked like, okay, here's a manipulative girl manipulating a incompetent dude to make him a better person. Like that's the part that doesn't follow to me.
It's an interesting door you've opened, and I don't necessarily disagree with you, because there's a whole conversation about the idea of femininity redeeming masculinity, and it's starting at such a young age, because they're definitely portraying him as all brawn and no brains, correct?
Right, yeah. Right.
William, your description reminds me of that snarky, like, TV guide description of The Wizard of Oz, which is, a foreigner travels to a distant land and kills the first person she meets and then raises a gang to kill again.
Yeah.
It's like, well, guess that's what happens, technically.
Are you saying that I'm only technically correct?
That's the best kind of correct.
We'd have to see it to know. But now you've made it so I kind of have to see this movie. So.
Oh, man, that's the goal, right?
Second trailer.
Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile is the Ted Bundy biopicture starring Zac Efron. What? Zac Efron playing Ted Bundy? This is by the same guy who did the Ted Bundy tapes documentary on Netflix. It's also a Netflix-only movie. The thing that mainly gives me pause about this movie is, from what I've read, is it's being told from the perspective of the girlfriend. Which, why is that compelling? I just don't understand.
So, I kind of do.
Okay, well, you can explain that in 2 seconds. That is not going to stop me from seeing this. It does. I want to say this. This trailer did also look a little bit naturalistic. So it could go that way. But I like Zac Efron. I think this could be interesting if done well. And the Ted Bundy tapes were interesting. So I'm interested in seeing how they're going to dramatize this. But of course, I love movies like From Hell about Jack the Ripper. So this is a hug for me.
Hug.
I don't know why you... That's very weird. Gross. To sexualize that, especially considering what Ted Bundy did.
Gross. In case Justin's audio dropped out, the movie title is Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil, and Vile.
Did my audio drop out?
It dropped out on the word wicked. So it went. So it sounded like you said extremely, shockingly evil, and vile.
That's because my Massachusetts unconscious bias wouldn't let me say the word wicked in association with serial killer.
That's right. That's this movie is going to be wicked, Doc. So the reason I think it's compelling to tell it from her point of view is, one, there's plenty of stuff from his point of view, right? Including the whole court case and the documentary. And from her point of view, she was a central figure in all this because she stood by him for a very long time and ran I'm not going to say a propaganda campaign, but she ran her sort of own PR campaign for why he is innocent. And she was being manipulated the entire time. She was being manipulated from the moment they met. So to sort of see like what she had to go through of this person who she thought was great and come to terms with the fact that he is extremely wicked, shockingly evil, and vile, I think that's a fascinating story to tell. It's not the only story you could tell about this, but I think it's a fascinating angle on this story. So I think overall, this might be the best trailer for a Netflix movie I've ever seen. The writing is outstanding. The acting is pretty darn good. And the cast of characters here, the cast is tremendous. I think it looks more psychological than it does brutal. Like, I can't watch this if we're going to be graphic about what he did, but it seems to be a much more psychological thriller about what she has to go through to come to terms with what he did, which I think is fascinating. I'll put it this way. It's got to be a small category of people who've had the kind of career that Zac Efron has had and the type of range he has done as an actor. From High School Musical to Extremely Wicked to Baywatch. A lot of range there for Zac Efron. He might actually just be a good actor. Time will tell. But until that time, hug.
Hug.
Boom. Yeah, I was going to go with the Zac Efron thing too. I mean, I think he's a good pick for this because the sort of like the weird thing about this era was how much of a sort of like sex appeal there was for him. And I think that they're going to explore that. And certainly Zac can pull that off as sort of using his charm as a weapon. And to manipulate people. I'm with you, Daniel. I wouldn't be able to watch something like this if we got into all the gory graphic details. I think this is going to be an interesting movie, and this has a chance of being one of those movies where as soon as it drops and everyone's going to be talking about it. So I think I'm gonna watch this one. So
Netflix and hug.
Literally Netflix and hug on this one. William Midsider Megan said the same thing about the him being good looking in the Patreon only chat on Discord, where she doesn't understand how people can be saying that about Zac Efron in this trailer and about Ted Bundy because, you know, he's a fucking serial killer. And I don't know. This is one of those times where maybe you can answer this as a gay guy, but I think it's just that because I'm straight, like, I don't look at Ted Bundy and think that guy's good looking.
Yeah.
And like, I don't even think he looks that much like Zac Efron. I just think like, what, all white guys look the same? Like they look vaguely similar, but it's because they're both white.
Yeah. I saw that in Discord, and I never thought, like looking at pictures, I never thought he was attractive either. So to me, that's like another layer of the sort of fascination, the psychological fascination, like trying to understand how I can't answer. Because I don't find him attractive, and I don't see what people see. Like, obviously, I find Zac Efron attractive, but
okay, so that picture, that's side-by-side in Discord. They don't look that similar, right?
No, they don't. They don't.
Okay, so I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
He wasn't just sort of fine-looking or whatever, good-looking for a serial killer, by the way, but that he was also shockingly charming. Wasn't that it? Like he had an incredible presence about him.
Oh yeah, if you watch the Ted Bundy tapes, it's very apparent he's used to being manipulative, and he can spin things very well. And I think that's how he's been able to, or how he would not been able to, how he was able to get away with what he did for so long. I mean, even they were saying when he went to the when he went up to women, one of the things he would do is act like he was hurt or he needed their help, and that's how he got them over to his car to abduct them.
Yeah. Scary.
Final trailer.
Joker is the Joker prequel starring Joaquin Phoenix. It may or may not be connected to the other DC movies. That's unclear. It doesn't seem to be. But in this trailer, it seems to be taking a social justice approach to Joker, where he's a victim and he gets beat up a lot. And that's why he becomes the iconic supervillain. I'm going to restrain myself and not go on too much of a rant here, but I don't need to humanize and I don't need to have sympathy for a villain who's this bad, a villain who stands for anarchy, who stands for destruction, who stands for terror. Why do I need to? It's sort of like you said, Daniel, making Thanos right. And we can have a discussion about that. And maybe you want to touch on that a little bit. But I think this goes even further than Avengers Infinity War. I think Infinity War is just showing how he wins. I don't think it justifies him, but I think it's showing how he wins. But here, they're making us try to feel something for the Joker. Now, I was talking to my sci-fi author friend, Chris Chupnik, on Twitter, and he did make the point that if at the end of this movie, this was all from the Joker's perspective, and this was the story he was telling to get sympathy for himself and rationalize the way he is, that could be an interesting comment on victimhood, and it could be an interesting comment on social justice. But I highly doubt they're going that way. It looks like this is going to be naturalistic, and this looks like they're trying to be Oscar bait for superhero movies. And I am not down for this at all. I like Joaquin Phoenix. I think he is a tremendous actor, but I do not want to see a movie like this. This looks to me like it could be the black swan of superhero, supervillain movies. No, 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 thank you. Tackle.
Tackle?
All of that. I'm not sure how much more I have to add. I will say that the trailer, when we talk about something being dark, there's any number of angles you can take and what it means. To me, the trailer sets up the universe as being dark. And I don't mean the universe in terms of just like, you know, the Tolkien-esque universe or the Harry Potter universe, but literally reality. It sets up reality as being so malevolent that Joker is almost an inevitable result of how terrible reality is. And I think that is not only something I could, I couldn't sit through that, but also I don't want to patronize that because it's just not true and it's horrifying. I will say that the trailer is obviously artistically done and very well crafted, and Joaquin Phoenix looks like a tremendous actor, but at least Heath Ledger's Joker was put in the context of Batman, where you have some virtue. This is a piece just about his vice, just about the evil that is Joker, and apparently the horrific universe that he is a result of. So this, for me, is a full-throated, unequivocal tackle.
Tackle.
Yeah, I agree with your guys' take 100%. I would love to see the movie Justin described with that ending. That would be great. I have two questions though to add to the discussion here. First one is: are they just borrowing the visual elements of Nolan and not really understanding how to apply it, right? Because like even from the like sort of thumbnail of the image, you know, you have a similar sort of green tint and those sort of things. But if the entire universe is this, like, what is the point of this kind of stylization in something that looks naturalistic, right? Like, it seems like,
well, that's the whole problem with the labeling of things as dark and gritty to begin with that Daniel was referring to.
I mean, dark and gritty means you lower the brightness and you add film grit, right? That's what dark and gritty means.
Right. Well, exactly. That's what Daniel's saying, you know, with the whole Nolan's dark and gritty, Snyder's dark and gritty, where they're acting like it's the universe that's dark in those movies. People can't, the only thing I can think of is it has to be a concrete bound perspective. You see these things visually and you think, oh, that means this is malevolent. Where that the opposite is true in Nolan and Snyder's movies. I mean, maybe Nolan's a little, we talked about that on some of the Nolan notes we've done already. Maybe his universes are a little darker than Snyder's, but Snyder's universe in itself isn't good or bad. It's the people are good or bad. I mean, that's the entire point. But they confuse the sort of the grit and using the filters in this way with exactly what Daniel's saying.
The other question I have is, you brought up about you don't need the Joker's background story, right? This is something that I think a lot of writers struggle with when writing villains, right? They can be cartoonish, right? They can be unmotivated evil, right? And I think Joker, you don't need his backstory to understand his evil, right? Like, think of all those stories he tells to the individuals as he's sort of torturing them or committing crimes, right? All those stories about himself or how he came to be, and they're all different, right? And that's sort of the point with Joker. And I'm afraid you're taking away from Joker when you are telling his true backstory, whatever that would be, right? You're taking away from this force that is the Joker. And so my question is, how do you write villains, right? And I know that's probably a large discussion, but like, do you have to, how do you motivate a villain without doing this naturalistic crap?
I mean, there's that's a ridiculously long conversation. I think that could be an entire podcast episode.
Yeah.
There are any number of ways, but it depends on what the story calls for.
Right. I mean, it's about the values, that the theme of the story and how they are destructive of it and how they're trying to bring about anti-life rather than life. I mean, ultimately that's what it boils down to, right? I mean, if the choice is life or death, then the hero has to always be moving towards life, where the villain always has to be moving towards death. And you just couch it in the context of whatever the theme is. And then as far as how expansive your exposition is, well, that's something you have to limit or delimit based upon whatever you think is the best to tell the story you're trying to tell. It's just a very contextual discussion. And in the sake of the Joker, or in the specific situation of the Joker, I guess there have been attempts in comics to have, there have been different versions of his backstory. So I think you can do a backstory for a villain. I think it's possible. I just think that this is the worst possible way to do the Joker's backstory. And the Joker is a villain where, in particular, I appreciate and I like him better, the Nolan version, where, as you said, William, he tells the different stories of how he got these scars. Yeah, where he's trying to say that his scars are his rationalizations for being evil.
Yeah, yeah. So if it's not obvious by now, I'm not excited about this movie. Unfortunately, a lot of people are, so that's also kind of scary. But I'm not going to go see this, so tackle.
Tackle.
And in regards to a lot of people are, this is sort of the collectivistic nature of groups and people who say they have similar values nowadays. You know, I'm more connected to these Snyder fans and these Release the Snyder Cut fans now after going to that weekend. And a lot of them are excited for this movie. I just don't understand how you can be a fan of Zack Snyder's movies and then you're excited for a movie like this. But it's because primarily they're a DC group. They're not a Zack Snyder group. It's not about the values. It's about supporting these types of films. And they've latched on to Zack Snyder as sort of this elitism feeling where, oh, we actually like this. We don't like these, you know, Shazam type movies. And it's disappointing to see because, you know, we've talked extensively about the values in Zack Snyder movies, and this Joker movie stands in opposition to all of that.
Well, if there are any mid-centers out there who are going to see this movie, maybe they could change our mind on the social medias or Discord. Let us know what we're missing from this, why you want to see it, etc. Curious to hear it.
And if you do see it and there is something redeeming about it, please tell us, because
certainly,
as always, and this is something Dr. Drew says, and I want to drive this home, I would love to be proven wrong. If you can prove me wrong and prove there's more value in the world and this is better than I think it is, that only enhances my life. So please, please prove me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about conversations and proving people wrong and having discussions, that leads perfectly into this week's Life on the Midside. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Cause I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and smile. Yeah. This week's Life on the Midside is a question submitted by Midsider Tom. And I love this question because I just think there's so many angles about it. And I think it's so fascinating. It's a little bit long, but I'm going to read the whole thing and then we're going to talk about it. Do you have any opinions on being offended versus brushing it off when someone makes a joke directed at you? I was at work the other day and a coworker offered me a muffin. I accepted it, and as she gave it to me, she said as a joke that I'm a growing boy. I understand that I am young. I look even younger than I am, and I'm a little too thin and a little short, so the joke is somewhat applicable. But I didn't really find it all that funny. She recognized that I didn't find it funny and apologized, saying it was a joke, and I sat down for 5 minutes, wrote down the circumstances, and thought about whether or not I should care about this. I ended up walking over to her office and explaining that I get that I look young, but it's hard for me to be taken seriously at work when people make jokes about my youth. It indirectly associates me with immaturity, and I fear people won't take me as seriously. I want to make this less about my particular situation. I want to hear your thoughts on the general principle. I'm not an uptight person. I make jokes. I laugh at jokes, even ones that might be slightly inappropriate in an office. But I think the line was crossed there, especially since I've only been at this office for a month and I don't speak the primary language in the office. I don't know what the primary language thing means. I mean, I think Tom's Canadian, so maybe he's in like Quebec. So maybe it's primarily French. Maybe that has something to do with it. But the rest, I think we can understand pretty well. And for me, I think there's a couple of things going on in here that are fascinating. The first is just simply existing as a guy who's shorter, smaller, or looks younger. I mean, I, especially with my braces, I still get people think I'm in college or younger. I mean, when I started my current job, people kept asking me if I was a student assistant forever. And I had to figure out how to deal with that situation. And then there's the whole idea of masculinity tied up in this, where how do you take a joke? How do you respond to a joke? Do you say something back? You know, do you respond with like a Sawyer from Lost comment where you hit with a biting comment back? Do you just laugh at it even if it's not funny to show self-assuredness? Or do you just ignore it? Because to me, what I immediately bristle at in this is the idea that he came off as offended to the point that she apologized and said it was just a joke. I would never want someone to give me that reaction if they made a joke towards me. If I can tell they're not being intentionally malevolent and they're just being benevolent with the joke, but then that's another discussion. Is the joke intended to be a benevolent joke or is it intended to belittle him? So there's so much going on contextually here to dig into. What do you guys think?
Well, William runs a business, so maybe we should hear from him.
I don't joke about people's age. That would be a restricted category in California, so can't do that. But, you know, I think, well, first of all, kudos to Tom. I think it sounds like you handled the situation well. As far as the general principles here, I think Justin's kind of started to outline it. Like, you have to kind of, you have to decide outside of that moment, you know, is this a malevolent thing or a benevolent thing? You know, especially I will speak as I will put my male privilege back on momentarily. This is how guys bond. This is something that if you aren't a guy or don't have a lot of experience with male friendships, you notice them belittling each other all the time, and you can confuse that for malevolence. So there's a calibration that has to happen. You know, guys give each other.
But that's part of what makes this. Right, and that's part of what makes this interesting is it's a woman saying this.
Yeah, and maybe she was. I'm totally, you know, going on a limb here, but maybe she's trying out this behavior, right, and not getting it wrong, right? That could totally be a thing.
Well, because it's different. Look, flat out, William. I mean, maybe because you're gay, this is something you don't quite get. But it's a lot different when a woman says to an adult male, "Oh, you're a growing boy." Than if another guy says that. Because if another guy says that, it's like jokingly, you know, saying, "Oh, I'm more masculine than you, ha ha ha," and it's making fun of that whole dynamic. But when a woman says it, it's sort of like belittling your masculinity to you, and it's like her saying she doesn't take you seriously. So I get why he would have been upset at that, because it's like, as a woman, why do you need to say that if you see that guy that way? It's just like immediately you're putting on the table that you possibly don't even respect him as a man.
Yeah.
It's like she's acting like your mother, right? Oh, you're a growing boy. You better eat this. Bitch, I don't need another mother.
I don't want the one. Look, part of this is, whoever you are, you have to decide what kind of persona you want, what kind of person you want to portray, what kind of person you want to be seen as. So you get to decide all those things. And especially you get to decide those things in the workplace environment. I don't think it's a matter of being uptight or not being able to take a joke, etc. You are at work. It is a different kind of place. If you had this reaction, you know, with people out at a bar, I think we'd have a very different kind of answer. But this is an environment where you were getting work done, you were being paid to get work done, and there should be a certain kind of air of professionalism. Now, I'm not saying what this woman did was, you know, firing worthy or anything like that. It just probably just crosses a line. And the way you handled it is exactly the way Midsider Tom handled it, which is to explain, "Look, I'm not particularly mad at you, but I do think that that was across the line. I'd rather not joke about that kind of thing for XYZ reasons, etc.
Yeah, what you're doing there is the principle there is called setting a boundary, right? You're setting a boundary.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, whoops, you crossed the boundary. And it's no big deal, but you did it. And can you do it different next time?
It's actually really hilarious in a certain way that that's how you replied to her, because she belittled your masculinity, and then you came back with a super masculine thing where you forced a confrontation and set a boundary, and you were like, bitch, I'm not a man. I'm a man. Don't say that shit to me. But you said it in like a very deft way. It's actually it's pretty fucking funny if you think about it.
So, yeah, I don't think anything was wrong here, and I think setting boundaries is a good thing. I think setting boundaries in all areas of life is a good thing, but I think in particular in the work environment, it's a good thing. If you're career focused and you're interested in moving up or just doing your job particularly well, then you have to set boundaries. You have to let people know how you want to be seen. You have to be how you want to be seen. So kudos.
Yeah. And a couple other things in sort of that vein, this does show lack of boundaries on her part. She clearly does not know how to conceptualize a proper relationship, but that's also sort of the question here. We're missing so much context, and this is, you know, sort of what William's saying about how she could have been trying to associate in a masculine way. There's actually an argument here that she could have been trying to be like flirty with that kind of comment. I'm not saying it was good flirting, but that could have been the intent. I mean, we don't know her age. We don't know how it was said. We weren't there to know what the intent was. So there's a lot of here that we don't even know what her intent was. I mean, it could have been completely malevolent, but it could have been also completely to the other side of benevolence, where she was trying to bond on a certain level and didn't know how to execute it. So there's that. And then there's one other thing here. As a guy who also looks young and is smaller, that really stood out to me, and I'm going to point this out and make a point that somebody else probably wouldn't make on this show.
Point it out and make a point.
I'm a little too thin. You say that? If you're really worried about how you look young and about how women are responding to you in this way, 100%, I'm going to tell you, go to the gym, put on muscle. Because women may make these comments still, but they will look at you differently when they're making these comments, and it will be more obvious why they're making the comments, and you can get away with being more slightly dickish in a professional environment. If a woman said this to me in a non-professional environment,
oh my God,
you can just be like, fuck you. You know, what the fuck's your problem? Like, why would you say that? Or you could say something like, yeah, if you want to talk about growing, and, you know, put that out there. But
PSA. PSA, don't be dickish in a professional environment.
Right. And in a professional environment, you can just say something like, well, you know, I'm not actually that young, or no, I'm not actually a student assistant. And what I'm saying, be dickish, like, you make them feel bad for making an assumption that otherwise they wouldn't have made, but only because you look young. And you can get away with it more if you have more of an outwardly, overtly masculine appearance. So that's what I would say if that's something you're worried about. An example I'm going to give you is, so one of the things we've started doing now in my team is we don't want to drink the California public water from the faucets. So we buy bottled water and we each take turns. And at one point, one of the girls on my team had bought two cases of bottled water and she wanted me to help her carry them. Again, even though I look young, I get asked to carry stuff all the time. Even though I'm only 5'6", I get asked to carry stuff and lift stuff and put stuff high on ceilings. The other day, I was asked to put something high on a wall. But because the women just think I'm masculine, because I'm built now, it was like high on the wall. And I'm looking at the lady, I'm like, I can't reach that. I'm like barely taller than you. And she was like, oh, I'm sorry. I just assumed you could do that. So it's interesting the way that changes. But so I'm carrying these waters up and we get to the elevator and I put them down on the ground and the girl is like, oh, when we get up to the 8th floor, I'll just carry the water from there. Every person we walk by, every woman we walk by was like, why are you letting her carry the water? And then I could just say to every one of them, I said, it's 2019. She said she wanted to carry the water. And that made them feel bad because they were being stupid and trying to shame me. And I was just stating a fact. It's 2019. She said she wanted to carry the water. That's what I mean when I'm talking about like being slightly dickish. It's not really dickish, but if anyone has any sort of shame in them, they will feel it that way.
I experience this, Justin, when I go out with my wife and my child, and there will be times when my wife wants to do things on her own because she has a very particular way of doing it. So she'll have like the baby in one arm and the, pushing the stroller, and I'm just standing next to her, and people are like, are you going to help her? It's like, you don't know the relationship my wife and I have. You really don't understand. If she wanted my help, she would not ask my help. She would just throw the baby into my arms.
That's what I was going to say. I can imagine Fiza just handing the baby to you and walking.
Yeah.
Not even asking.
No, totally. She hands the baby to store clerks, Justin.
Yeah.
She's like, here, I'm going to shop. So, yeah, all good. All good discussion. Anything else to add, William?
No, I think those are the principles there. Setting boundaries is the key. And
good.
Doing it in a slightly dickish way, like Justin says.
And go to the gym. All right, that wraps things up. What did we learn this trip, William?
I need to go to the gym, man.
I learned that not only do I have subconscious bias, but I have bias when I'm sleeping at night. I don't even know it. Unconscious bias.
Unconscious bias. That's where you sleep only on your left side, right? That's unconscious bias.
I guess so. Apparently. Ridiculous. Justin, what did you learn this week?
Actually, both of your points were the points I was going to make. I was originally going to make what Jim point, and then I was going to make the unconscious bias point. So I think we have a good episode here if we all hit the same things that we learned.
Well, we hope you learned something, and you can tell us if you did on all the social medias outside. You can also go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to past episodes. Go to themidside.com/store and get your merch, including your False Dichotomy Bro shirt. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts and iTunes, leaving us a 5-star rating. We have like 30 5-star ratings on Apple. That's awesome. Let's keep that up. Tremendous. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. Patreon.com/themidside is where you can go to give us a couple bucks every month. We really appreciate that. Helps us keep the lights on. Can't do that? Tell a friend. Please tell a friend about the show. Helps the show grow. Helps us have more of you out there to listen to more of us, which we like. And until next time, we love you a lot.
This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin Emelzneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.
Little lantern hanging, Justin, with your mic cutting out. Flawless mic performance until the hopeful romantic, and then about midway through your mic drops, and at the end you had some mic drops. So
yeah, it was great until that part in the very end.
So whoever else is using your internet, tell them to like go get a smoothie during recording
less,
or something.
Yeah, less 4K streamings on Netflix while you're recording.
No one needs to watch Gossip Girl that many times.
All right, I will take that into account. Thank you.
All right, Captain Sirius.
I couldn't think of a joke, okay?
She wasn't watching Gossip Girl. She was watching Crazy Rich Asians or something.
Nothing. That's racist.
I know.